This week on RSBNB Update, the Weapon Diversity Project has been canceled, but were players really excited for it? Is the new player-owned farm nerf actually a buff? And the vision for the future is revealed with Mod Osborne and the episodic content team Designer Diary. This is RSBNB Update, episode 741, recorded Thursday, September 12th, 2019. Move fast and remaster. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for RSBNB Update yet again this week. You know, one of those patch weeks that gives more than we could hope for. Just Tannis and myself sitting in this week. Welcome back.
Thank you, Shane.
Interesting week, isn't it?
Yeah. It's one of those redirect weeks, I think.
Yeah, it's a good week. I'm actually very happy right now.
You know, I'm feeling optimistic. I know, like, where's the soundboard? But I'm feeling pretty good. Feeling pretty good.
Yeah, and you know, going through this is something that many people are going to say, what the hell, how can you be optimistic about this? This is a week where we see details to, you know, the nerf of one of the biggest pieces of content out there, the player-owned farm, but we also see an update canceled, and we see, oh, Jagex is going out there trying to make themselves look good in another live stream. That's what the cynical player would say. But, you know, I think this week is going to be a turning point, to be honest.
Yeah, I think this week there's a couple of different ways, you know, that you could look at it and that you could take it. But when you kind of take everything as a whole that has came out since, what, Friday, and you put that together, then that's when you begin to see a little bit of a bigger picture.
And yeah, light at the end of the tunnel. And I have a grand theory on this that I'll bring together at the end of the live stream discussion. It'll be interesting to see if any of the other listeners have figured that out. So starting off this week, we're going to actually not start with the patch notes. We're going to start with what I feel is the biggest piece of news coming out of Jagex this week, aside from, of course, the Designer Diaries, which we'll get to after, kind of goes with the live streams, is that the Weapon Diversity Project has been canceled. So
yeah,
I want to just go through this post and highlight some of the language used on this. And, you know, it starts off by saying last week the decision was made to cancel the Weapon Diversity beta, or the Weapon Diversity update. And this is a decision that they haven't taken lightly, as, you know, they wanted the Weapon Diversity Project to be due for quite some time, to be part of the summer release schedule that would give people something to play after The Land Out of Time. Recall, it was supposed to come out in August, but was pushed back to September. And lo and behold, here we are in September, the project is canceled. And, you know, this is something we need to address on this. And the post on its own, the first two paragraphs are to the point and factual, which is exactly what you want. Following this, it dives into what exactly happened with this. The overriding impression was that the effects weren't chunky or transformative enough. Most of the effects were modifiers on DPS, which of course means there wasn't actually differentiation between weapons, and most players would simply choose the weapon with the optimal DPS modifier.
You know what?
We noticed that when the mauls came in, right? We asked David about that, and he said, yeah, everyone's going to go for the Drygor mauls.
But even before that same episode, David said it was just going to change the meta of what. Like, there's still going to be a best.
He
no matter
predicted
what
that.
Happens,
he said
he predicted it.
His exact words were, you know, you're going to bring a couple of extra switches, but nothing is going to change.
Yeah. So he's on the money.
Yeah. Now, looking into this, they also say they were further from the sign-off on the project than they had anticipated. What this means for everybody not familiar with this terminology is that the project was further from being completed than they wanted and getting it into our hands, which means we would have got it after RuneFest. They would have needed to redesign several problematic weapons, find a decent method of communicating the effects of weapons to the player, and complete significant testing. And anyone playing the beta will notice that there are still glaring issues. And that's something we also highlighted in our look through at the beta, is that you wouldn't know what exactly each weapon would do if you came into the game fresh and looked at it.
Yeah, you would have had to have been following this whole process to really have any idea really whatsoever.
And looking at it here, the project was 50% complete upon cancellation, when before the beta it was estimated they were at 80%. So they thought it would have just taken a little bit of extra time to tack some things onto the weapons that existed in-game.
Yeah.
Other options, they could have went ahead with this and, redesigned the poorer weapons and test the remainder of the project. The project wouldn't have hit its initial goals of bringing strategy back to weapon choice, and it likely wouldn't have had much negative effect. It might have actually had a small positive effect, and of course, as I implied, we would have had a launch in October, which they said would have drawn resources from another project. They could scrap this and start over, and they would make sure every weapon had strong utility benefits and would design openly with the players. Utility benefits would be more difficult to design and develop, and this would have meant a launch in February.
Hmm. Okay.
And, this is what they said they didn't want to do with mining and smithing. They didn't want to do any more of these updates where they get down the path of designing it, and then, oh, lo and behold, we need to start over.
Yeah.
And the other option is cancel the project, which is what they took, and this has the net benefit of meaning that other projects in development would remain as they are and would gain the additional QA resources. So the QA resources that are freed up from this are going to a project that's currently being worked on and will be announced at RuneFest. And they say, we still believe in the aims of weapon diversity, so that we agreed we would get our design team to completely design new utility benefits for weapons, which could be introduced over time rather than one big clutch. For example, a quest might reward a javelin. We would then take the opportunity to release a javelin that would be rolled out to all javelins at the same time. And they say we're aware players will be disappointed, and they're particularly those that have been championing this. They appreciate that this is frustrating, and we will ensure that the same time is spent on updates coming this year. And there we have it. That is the weapon diversity project being canceled in a nutshell.
Now, I remember that we've been supportive of it because, it was fine.
It's nice for having choice, and we felt it also expanded out the mid-range more than the top end.
But I don't know of anybody that was dead set, oh man, I gotta have the weapon diversity project. I just gotta have it. I don't think that's a very large percentage at all.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see numbers of players that interacted with it in the beta.
Yeah, and there was going to be some interaction in the beta just because, there was such goofy stuff, sometimes
like
that people went
to,
they had to come and check that
monsters.
Out, right? But I actually think this was good on their part.
This is the correct decision to make.
Yeah, it's just like poker, man. You gotta know when to fold it.
Right.
And, This was a good fold. I would have hated it if they had went back to the drawing board and then did it over again, essentially, because then no matter how good it would have came out, it would have never – they would, in their mind, would have never justified the time they spent on it.
Precisely.
You know what I mean?
And there would always be that question, what about the original design? What if that would have went forward instead?
Yeah.
Now – I just want to highlight two things with this one before we move on from this, because first point on this is that weapon diversity, whichever way you split it, is not a project that is going to completely change the way you play RuneScape combat as it is works fine right now, whether it's Slayer or PVM. It's not inherently broken. This was a vanity update that would have provided more choice to the players. Because I don't want to minimize this project, but as it is right now, the combat system works well enough, I think. So it would have been nice. This is one of those updates that's on the would be nice list, not in the need or the want category, I think. Am I right in placing it there?
No, I think you're right. And I mean, I think this is something that kind of maybe, yeah, I'm sure we're going to go into this a lot more when we get to the live stream section. But this didn't come from any suggestion, or this wasn't from like players saying, "Hey, we'd love to have some." Right, and that's fine. It's just that there's no outcry for this.
Yeah.
And so did we really, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if it was necessary. And you're not going to have the blowback when people weren't asking for it. Then again, people weren't asking for no ComK rework either. But
that was actually needed some from a game design angry. Perspective.
Yeah, I mean, sure, but I mean, no one was asking for it, so, you know.
Now the next,
well, actually, the people that were asking for it got exactly what they wanted.
Yeah. Now, from the, let's just say from the marketing and persuasion perspective on this news post, this is the way a news post should be. It is to the point. It addresses the concerns, what led to the decision made, and highlights why the path taken was the best option going forward. Now, anytime a hard decision like this is made, you need to get whoever wrote this news post to write that post. Because this news post is the model for delivering bad news.
Well, and it's, I mean, it was well done. You know, I don't know. Do we feel the same if it's something that's close to us that we want? Like, what if, you know what I mean? Like, what if they came out and they said, "Okay, guys, we know everyone wants a construction rework and we're going to do it." And then they had to cancel that. Like, would we say the same thing?
It all factors into the design. You can't compare apples to oranges.
Okay, so you're just saying, like, the manner in which it was presented.
The manner in which it presented, the circumstances leading to the redesign, the circumstances leading to the cancellation, all of that would need to come into play.
Okay.
To make that decision.
Yeah, because, I mean, I agree with you. I just wonder, it's like, I can't help but wonder, like, would I, you know, because I wasn't close to this. Is that playing any role whatsoever? I don't really know. But I did think it was a well-written statement.
All right. Following from this, I think we can go into the player-owned farm changes. We'll, of course, talk about weapon diversity again in the live stream summary. But we do have the data detailed on the player-owned farm nerf, which is coming into game this following Monday. And I'll just say that I'm currently about 300K from 99 farming on the alt account.
That's awesome. And I feel like you're going to be bathing in my tears.
Not really. I didn't enjoy the I didn't enjoy the process because it was too quick.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying when we get to the nerf part.
Okay. Okay, you're right. You're right. I'm actually already planning my farm to reduce to increase the amount of money that I'm going to bring in after this update. So, anyways.
Yeah.
Yes. So this post is once again built up to structure the way that the problem areas are looked at. So this is what the player-owned farm looks like now, the nerf. Let's just forget everything we heard previously with the previous nerf and just focus on what we're getting this time. So problem number one is that there's too much XP for too little activity, which we can agree with. You know, less than 3 months, a character from level 1 farming to level 99 farming, spending 5 minutes a day at the player-owned farm for practically no input cost. free farming.
Right, but I mean, you've just ran the numbers. It's like exactly the same.
Right, and I'm going to get there. Now, what they're going to be doing is reducing the harvest XP by 50%. And previously it was 70%. But to get to this 50% number, you need to also factor in the health and happiness of your animals. But you're also going to be able to have your XP boosted by XP boosting items like the farm outfit and bonus XP.
Yeah. I mean,
and you know, I actually have a theory on this. Theory number one is that the way they are going about this to allow the farm XP from the animals to be boosted by items and XP is a way at appealing to the efficiency skillers out there to nerf more palatable to them.
It is, but you know what? The funniest thing about that is, though, that the XP was the least of anyone's concerns. Like, that was actually the one area that all parties could agree was too high. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that was the one area that we're like, yeah, that's rough, but nah, we get it. Like, so I think they actually could have went deeper.
On the nerf?
When it comes to XP, because that just wasn't the main issue for a lot of people, I don't think. Because it's pretty on par with all the other ways that you would farm.
We have discussions from time to time, you and I, where we talk about things related to the show. We talk about, you know, just things that we're doing in RS aside from the podcast, of course. And we actually ran into something really peculiar this evening or earlier. And that is that the original numbers, based on if you did magic trees from level 75 and palm trees and a calquit every day from level 75 to 99, which is about, you know, I want to say 11.8 million XP, I think it is, between 75 and 99, if my math is correct on the way that works. It's about 1.2 mil XP to get level 75, I think.
Trust you on that.
So based on that, what we discovered as to how these original farming numbers came out into existence, and I don't know if anybody's ready for this, but yeah, it's 1.2 mil to 75. So take just, you know, on average 13 mil. That's an easy way to simplify the math. You remove 1.2 mil of that, you get 11.8 mil from 75 to 99. And we did the math on this, doing two tree runs a day, one fruit tree run a day, and one calquit a day, and averaging the amount of time it will take you to get 1.2 million XP is the same amount of time it took me to go from level 1 to 99 farming with the player on farm. And the difference being in this is that the first chunk from level 1 to 75 is actually just a whole lot faster with the player-owned farm. And the theory that I have is that when they were balancing the player-owned farm initially, they balanced it so that the very top end from 75 to the bulk of the skill from 75 to 99 would take the same amount of time with the player on farm as it would take a regular player doing two magics, one palm, and one calquit run a day. And that's how we got to the initial farm number terms of balancing.
Which I think was totally fair because it was an alternative way of turning farming.
And when you think about it, that's exactly how we got to where we were with the player-owned farm changes. And then we get the, you know, the general freakout that people are spending, you know, 5 minutes a day on it. And there's people who have got the XP and effectively only a few hours of gameplay time. Then that became an issue. And lo and behold, the reason why we're now nerfing the farm is based on the fact that it's just not interactive enough. And, you know, that actually makes a whole lot of sense thinking about it. And, you know,
well, because where did that leave? Like they came out with these ideas when it first dropped, you know, of the bees and the wax, and this could increase the health, and this will increase this or that, but none of that mattered whatsoever, really. Yeah. It was all pretty meaningless. Now, I don't have any problem with interaction.
That's dead content.
You should have to go, right, and so I think you should have to go there, you know, like every day or whatever. I'm still worried about the food with certain animals, even though it's way better than it was. It's the food and the breeding, I think, that are the hardest. And should we have ever had the breeding as good as it is?
No.
Well, I guess that's debatable.
No.
Maybe not, but we did. That's the thing.
Yeah.
we did, and it's always hard to give something away. I think three time – well, we'll get into the details, but those I still think are a little hard to swallow a little bit.
Yeah. And, you know, let me just make – I'm just double-checking my numbers here because I want to make sure we got this right. Yeah. I remember all these numbers from what each XP gives for each tree just because I did it so many times. So if you just do two magic runs a day, one palm tree run a day, and this is 12 magic trees a day, 7 palm trees a day, and one calquit a day, you are pulling in 248K farming XP one day, 248,362, all right? Now, if you take the 11.8 mil that it takes to unlock the level 75 farming to get the magic seeds and magic trees, that's 47 days to get from 75 to 99 farming. And I am on that path right there with the player-owned farm of going from effectively level 30 farming, which is practically from level 1 when you look at the XP curve, all the way to 99
right.
In a relatively the same amount of time.
Well, and
the difference is the interaction.
Okay, well, that's something I have a question about, all right? Because when you talk about farming and you're talking about tree runs, see, we look at that as 47 days, right?
Yeah.
That took
more
you 5 minutes
more
to do the run, right?
No.
Right?
No.
But
more than 5 minutes to do that run. Probably more like 12 to
okay,
15.
Okay, but at the end of the day, we look at the player-owned farm in, like, minutes and hours. No one looks at that as, like, days. And I wonder why is that? Because the tree runs, if you really broke it down, it's probably not a whole lot more than the farm when it comes to, you know, running around. If you're, you know, if you're an expert farmer like Shane and you have all your teleports and you got all your stuff and you've got a preset, I mean, it's pretty much boom, 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 right?
The farm is still quicker. The farm is still quicker because it's all in one spot.
Well, I mean, yeah, I can see that. That's why, like, they could slow it. I hate to say it, but we had it a little. It's just hard to take things away.
Yeah, and you know that's what I said, and that's why I think some of the changes that we're going to talk about in the live stream are important too, because they illustrate the right way to do these nerf and rebalance changes. So let's move on to the breeding side of it. And problem two is there are too many animals in game reducing their value, which, you know, I completely agree with, because if you have the collector, you go away for 2 weeks, you get this huge list of dragon eggs that are coming out of your breeding pen, which is absolutely insane. And, you know, I don't even know if this is going to fix that problem, because part one is reducing breeding outside of the breeding pens. Animals in small pens take 1.5 times as long. Medium pens take 2 times as long. Large pens will take 3 times as long as if they were in the breeding pen. And, you know, I have to say, as it is right now, my dragons in my large pens really don't breed all that much.
Yeah, neither do mine.
So the only thing this has as a benefit or as a drawback for me is I will likely be stopping zygomites based on this. And if anything, they might move into the breeding pen if I was going for beans after this update. We'll have to wait and see how long it actually takes in practice. Where this will hurt people based on my experience, and this is, you know, why I did that rush to 99 farming on the alt account, is because animals in small pens will take 1.5 times as long to breed. And, you know, the chinchampas are the best for XP as they come in because they just breed every day in the small breeding pen right now as it is. So this will hurt people a lot here.
Yeah, I think it's a little too slow because I know the argument is that there's too many animals in game, but here's the thing. None of those animals count besides the ones with the traits that people are looking for, and that's not going to change.
But you can make them have whatever trait that people are looking for, and that's the key. Not many people do that.
Well, reroll. I mean... Right, but it's I just don't see how that really addresses anything.
I don't see that this addresses much beyond, you know, the XP in the small pens. The medium pens we'll have to wait and see, but the large pens I don't really see being much of an issue right now at all.
Well, but that's the thing, like it's slow now. This is gonna make it 2 or 3 times slower. So you're never going to hardly see it. Like, it's going to be a fluke when that happens. And look, there is an argument to be made that that's how it should have been when it came in. But this is where we're at now. So I think it's too much on the higher end. Like, I'm fine with the chimchampas the way they are. The 1.5 time, okay.
Yeah, that's going to...
Because they are super fast.
Mm-hmm.
But... The large pen is the one that's really got me because I'm just like, it's just not going to be happening in there, like, at all, hardly.
All right, let's talk about the collector then.
We'll see.
Collector can hold 90 animals right now. That's too many.
Yeah!
And, you know, this is where I think the bulk of the breeding changes need to be talked about. The plan is so that the collector will hold 10 of each breed for a total of 30 possible animals. And, you know... This should have been step one, to be honest. This should have been the thing that was led with in the breeding problem. Because this is going to have more of an impact than the other one will.
And you could have... this is something that people could have stomached. I would have much rather seen a gradualness to this. Like, let's take out the collector, see where it's at. Does it still need more nerf? Okay. Or, you know, hit the XP. Okay. Good. Then do the collector. Okay.
Now there's one problem with doing that.
Do we need more?
There's one problem with doing that is that you would need to segment in each of these as individual updates, where it's a lot easier for the team to do it all at once and focus it from an all-encompassing strategy.
Well, yeah, I'm sure it's easier for the team, but it makes it a much more noticeable, and it's
right.
And
but
it's
each one of those
us.
Nerfs would need to be built in as separate updates. From the development perspective, it's a lot more feasible to do it the way it's being done now.
Okay.
The final point is that there's no point in feeding animals because they eat so little. Yeah, and you know this is a problem as it is right now because it's possible to trait your animals so that they don't get diseased. If you really wanted it to do that.
You know, and this was the one that bugs me a little bit because I know people don't feed their animals. I just neglect them, but I always have food in my troughs. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I always feed my animals. And the frequency, like, it's not a big deal when it comes to dragons or anything that can eat, like fish, not a big deal. Okay. That's it's not going to cost that much more. But if they were to change the Champas from being omnivorous and the Zygomites, that's really significant because I can barely afford to feed my Zygomites already. Like, I am constantly running out and the food is expensive.
You know, there's actually a fun thing you can do for this. It involves fun? It involves a silver sickle and going to the Mortmeyer Swamp.
Oh, you said fun. You had me going for
it. But it is actually fun because there's a deposit box right there now.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Boy, that's
there's changed. A deposit box in the Mortmeyer Swamp.
Oh,
right,
dude,
next
you know,
to that
so,
area.
It's so funny. Back, you know, back in the day, I did Mortmeyer fungus to be able to afford my first set of full dragon armor.
Oh yeah,
the,
I did.
With
I did
the ornate Mortmeyer, and all that.
I did Mortmeyer fungus for my Herplar.
what's old is new again, huh?
Right. And I mean, you need to. I'm going to tell everybody the way to look at this is that, you know, go grab a pack yak, go spend an hour there, see how many fungus you get. Either feed your Zygomites. Or sell it on the Grand Exchange. Another,
yeah,
another good Slayer task after this update will be polypore creatures in the polypore dungeon because they drop garage and mushrooms.
Yeah, right. And that, yeah, that helps. But man, twice, I mean, it's basically doubling the food rate, right?
No, the animal will eat one food every hour. Whereas right now there's only a chance every 2 hours. So
it's doubling it.
No, not necessarily. It might have ate every 2 hours.
Right, but now it's going to be eaten every hour.
Right.
So that's twice as much food.
Sure. But at the same time, this is a more consistent way of looking at it.
Yeah, it's more consistent, but I mean, these are the two areas of the nerf that I think.
But
is it
really so bad with this? Because whenever the animal eats,
no,
its health and happiness will improve twice as fast.
No, I don't think it's bad in of the amount. I think it's bad depending on certain creatures because you're basically pricing certain farm animals out to where nobody's going to
be
dealing with
them. The only ones that are
going to
be priced out. Are the Zygomites. Because,
exactly.
You know, you want a cheap way to feed your chinchampas, go buy woad leaves from Weiss and the Gardener for 25 each.
Right, yeah. No, but the Zygomites are... I mean, it really kind of hurts them, I think. Maybe something in addition to this would to be a open up another option for feeding them. To bring them more in line with
why
the
does it hurt the Zygomites
seen.
Though? Because you can get the mushrooms from the Slayer Task. You can get the mushrooms with a deposit box right there in the Mortmeyer Swamp. And you have the added benefit that Zygomites are right in the smack dab middle of XP and beans compared to something like a Chinchampa or a dragon that they go so much quicker. And if they're going to eat food every hour, that means that you're going to need to do less to raise that animal's health and happiness, which on the whole, based on this, in terms of how every animal eats, it might be the most effective now if you can derive a good way to get mushrooms. The best way of, you know, getting the most XP out of this might just be to do Zygomites.
I mean, if you're willing to put in the time to do mushrooms like that, but when you think about it, like, look, I can chuck a stack of tuna in my dragon thing, and it cost me nothing.
Pennies.
Like, it's
effectively.
Pennies. Yeah, and I can do the same thing with the chimps. So, I mean, this is costing a lot more.
And, you know, I think it's actually fair for this to be here, costing a bit more than everything else, because when it comes down to the most optimal path to get beans, it's Zygomites. Especially if you put them in a breeding pen.
Yeah, I mean, that's what, yeah.
Because, you know,
that is
my takeaway from doing the player-owned farm twice, is that, yeah, dragons are good for, you know, those huge dumps of beans and whatnot in the XP. But if you just want something reliable coming in with fast growth cycles, you want to have the zygomites going.
I just don't see how you'd ever be able to afford keeping them in a breeding pen like that.
Well, I can't necessarily say how this is going to work, and we might have more information on this next week, but if the way it goes that I'm thinking is that there will be a market for adolescent dragons out there, and that might be a way of making money from the farm that would be able to offset the Mort Myers or the Mort Myer mushrooms or any kind of mushroom that's out there. And, you know, let me just actually give a quick example of this. Let me just have a look. So we want to – you use Mort Myer fungi, right?
Yeah.
So those are about 2,200 each, right? Yeah, that's what they're at, 2,235 right now. Now, a toad flax is 6,325. You could do one farming run with, say, 100 herbs, and that would be enough money to buy double the amount of mushrooms. So farming is, you know, once again, a self-controlled ecosystem here.
I mean, I guess that's nice, but I mean, you got to really be, I mean, you got to be into the farming.
Right. And, you know,
100 herbs, Shane, like I've never gotten 100 herbs in a run. I know you've gotten more, but
my record is 142.
I have a hard time. Yes, I've never.
Ultra Compost. 100. Farmer's Outfit. Magic Secateurs. Green Fingers Aura. And the Juju Farming Potion.
Okay.
With that, 100 plus runs are in the definite realm of possibility.
You just love it because it makes people do more farming.
Yeah, that's probably true as well. Let's move on to the next point about the breeding log, many completionists were concerned about. So people were concerned that this will make it harder to complete the breeding log. And what they've done with this is actually really amazing, I think, from the farming perspective. They are increasing the benefits of shiny enhancing traits. So all these traits like sparkling, glistening, and radiant are doubled in their effectiveness, meaning you're much more likely to get a shiny if you have these traits. They're also increasing the heredity nature of these traits. All traits now have a much higher base chance of being passed on to their children. It's not 100%, but you should see it much easier to be breeding the traits that you want into your animals, whether it's shiny boosting traits or the traits like jovial and immune.
Right. I think that's actually – I think it's going to be
And this is where the farm gets interesting to me. At this point, it's not because of, you know, the nerf that we just highlighted. No, it's actually because of the traits, believe it or not. Now, do you know what trait I'm thinking of right now?
No.
Okay. I am thinking, I got to get the exact name of it here. Let's see. There's two traits that I'm going to be paying special attention to next week. The first one is Fortunate, which gives an extra 5% beans. The other one is Giver, which will allow the animal to give 3% more XP when harvested.
Yeah, so your efficient players are not going to want any animal that doesn't have Giver.
Okay. Exactly. And this is where people who have the farm maxed out already can benefit. Where I see the money going on this is that if people are going for XP, they're going to want black dragons with the giver trait. And you can sell those at adolescent. They can raise them to elder if they want, and voila, XP. Or maybe even at baby if they want to go the full path. I don't know what's going to be the preferred method, adolescent or baby, but there you go. That's the benefit of this part of the nerf right here. And this is what makes the player-owned farm changes so impactful in my point of view and will allow the money to start flowing in from the farm is the increased heredity of these traits. And there's one more thing.
Uh-huh.
Let's say you produce a collection of shiny animals. And you can either sell them as a breeding pair so that they can continue on to produce shinies. Or you could stack Giver with the shiny animals. The shiny animals will now produce 25% more XP up from the 10%. So the best way of going about this is going to be to sell shiny animals and let people cash them in for XP. And, you know, in some ways, this part about the breeding changes is to situate the people who are concerned about completing the breeding log. But in my view, this is the biggest net benefit where someone who has optimized the player-owned farm can reap the rewards starting next week is through breeding. Specifically with shinies.
Albeit slower. But yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, a shiny animal with 25% more XP and double XP, you're going to be getting more XP than you are right now.
And I wonder if that's going to stick. I mean, it seems like nothing scaling-wise
it's gonna be a
ever
lot,
sticks.
No, it's going to be a lot of work to produce these shinies. I have my breeding pen set to with two dragons who are capable of producing shinies. If anything, I get one shiny every 2 weeks.
Oh, jeez.
So as it is right now, they are stupid rare. And, you know, based on these changes right now, I'd imagine I'd go to maybe one every 7 to 10 or 10 days after these changes come in. And that's with a perfect breeding pair. So it's not going to be too much. And with this, you know, this is the classic give a little, take a little. We give a little to them, but we also take a little back from them in the terms of being able to further optimize the farm. And I wish that was conveyed a little bit better in this post, because you really need to read through this and you need to understand how the farm works to see that this is an actual buff to the farm for those who have effectively min-maxed it and figured out what's going on with it. I see this as a buff, not a nerf.
Well, I mean, this part is... Yeah, they definitely...
Because I can do effectively do two herb runs a day and probably have enough to feed the mushroom people for, you know, 3 to 4 days.
Yeah. Look, don't get me wrong. This is 100 times better than the previous version. Like, you know what I mean?
And
like,
that's what people want to hear.
Much better.
And that's what people want to see and hear.
Yeah. I think really feed mushrooms is what I'm down to now as my major concern.
You know what I should do? I should produce a guide on how to make money with farming.
Yeah, well, you'd definitely be the guy to do that. What you're saying when it comes to the money, you're probably going to be able to make money again from the farm. At the price of less XP and more
XP. If you have money to burn, you can just go buy shinies. And this
you can.
This is not an XP nerf for you.
No, the rich get richer. Everyone else takes it on the chin. But no, I mean that's just kind of the way it is. I think. The best part to me is bringing in the ability to maximize your XP according to your knowledge of the game and your ability to stack your buffs.
Yes, and that's exactly that is
very good.
The way the farm should have come in, rather than just, hey, everybody gets max XP. And, you know, another thing we forgot about, the beehives. You're going to be able to take those honeycombs that raise happiness and raise health and sell those on the GE. Because, you know, what happens? Every time you use one of those honeycombs, they give you an extra 10% health or happiness. And if you don't want to feed your animals, if you just want to let them grow, have at it. But instead, use the honeycombs and top them up before you check the XP.
Yeah. I've never been able to get my honeycombs going right.
It all comes down to farming the flowers.
Okay.
Because each honeycomb takes a different flower. And, you know, this is something there was lots of money in for the first week or so of farms. And then when everyone realized, oh, we don't really need honeycombs, it just kind of dried up. So the ones that you're going to be interested in if you want to get ahead of yourself this weekend are delicious honeycombs, which are produced from marigolds, which boosts happiness, and medicinal honeycombs, which boost health, which is produced from woad leaves, which you can buy from Weissen the Gardener in Falador for 25 GP each.
Might need to go see him. Maybe I'll make
Put your flowers in the honeycombs this Friday and be ready on Monday to start selling these honeycombs.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea.
Because people always look at the food as a way to raise the animal's health. But if you want the surefire way of raising it, it comes down to these honeycombs.
Yeah.
So. All right, I'm ready to move on to the patch notes, and as you can tell, I'm very excited about this farming update coming on Monday.
I feel better than I ever did before. So that's something, right? I mean, it's...
And I'd like to think that I have helped move you along from being completely against it to, you know, being in a position of the changes being acceptable.
Yeah, I'd give you some on that.
All right, so moving on into the patch notes. Achievements section starts off with Super Restore Potions now has to be made within Brimhaven to complete the It's a Snap, like it's stated in the actual achievement section. And the reason for this is Snapdragon was only initially available as a herb to be purchased from the Brimhaven Agility Arena before farming came out.
Oh, wow.
Bosses with a challenge and hard mode encounter will no longer pop up already complete on the boss kill achievements. Elite dungeon boss kill achievements should no longer repeat if you have already completed them. Combat changes wise, fixed an issue where Maskana was assigning Slayer tasks from Vanaka, so it was assigning Slayer tasks from one Slayer Master above it. The Majorat aura can now be reset using Tier 3 and Tier 4 aura refreshes. This is a big one for anybody who bought that.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody should be happy about this one's biggest patch note of the week, I think.
And you can get that Majorat aura in-game now, too.
That's right. Either by Reaper points or spending a bond. Or three bonds, rather, I think it is. The Hey Eat power-up Dominion Tower special challenge now correctly lists Tarn's Lair as a requirement. Completion escapes are more reliably removed when you no longer meet the requirements to wear them upon login. The Death of Chivalry boss is now immune to poison, both in quest and in the Dominion Tower, to prevent poison being used to kill her while shielded. Boss fight skeleton minions in the Death to Chivalry quest can now scale to half their previous level to make them easier to defeat by high-level players with inferior equipment. You know, this is one hell of a boss fight.
So this is
another good change that kind of slips under the radar. And, you know, Death to Chivalry is one of those quests that you just have to do to unlock the top prayers on the non-ancient prayer book.
One of my faves. I love that quest.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, one of the focuses on the Sears Village Camelot area that we really have no reason to go back there anymore. Players can no longer attack hobgoblins through the locked door below the Tree Gnome Village. The Burthorpe Rabbits will no longer trigger with the scavenging perk. This was actually hotfixed last week. And the idea behind this is that people were just killing rabbits with the scavenging perk. And I don't know if you saw this, but there were people constantly just sitting there killing rabbits.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. So the way and why this was so powerful is that scavenging allows you to produce materials from monsters whenever they're killed, and pretty much anything gives combat XP. And, of course, rabbits, killing rabbits is one of the easiest things that you can get on this. So that's why this was ultimately patched in this case here. So, and, you know...
Okay.
Anytime you look at these materials. These are invention materials. So,
yeah.
I mean, it makes sense why people were doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was just amusing to go there and see the rabbits, you know, spazzing out.
The Holocaust of the rabbits.
Yeah. The buff bar on desktop clients can now be clicked through. This was a problem from last week that wasn't addressed but has been fixed this week. It was one of the big complaints about the buff bar. The eat food ability has now been made global cooldown agnostic, which we know what happened last time we tried to do that. So that's good. On mobile, the auto retaliate option will work more reliably. Stat reduction will also now display on your debuff bar, which they didn't do before. Graphics-wise, interfaces can now be scrolled down all the way automatically. Previously, if you use your mouse wheel, there would be a little bit of a buffer area at the end that you wouldn't be able to scroll through. You'd have to drag the scroll bar down. Snack Yak summoning has become much safer, no longer allowing them to be summoned in dangerous areas. The Amulet of Farming no longer appears as a diamond amulet when worn. I'd like to see a buff to that. You know, that would have been a neat reward for the player-owned farm, I think.
Yeah, something.
The Amulet of Farming.
I forgot about that.
Because, you know, there's really no point to use the Amulet of Farming with, you know, all the modern farming benefits that we have, because what it does is it allows you to monitor a farming allotment or flower patch, which, I mean, kind of blasé.
Exactly.
The monkey bars at the Berthorpe agility course can no longer be manipulated at the opposite end to throw a monkey wrench into the flimsy laws of time, space, reality, and good taste.
Okay.
I don't know what this was about, but I have a feeling it would have been hilarious had we seen it.
Mm-hmm.
The Legends cape and the Castle Wars capes are now more consistent across male and female character models, and the canopy of the Taverly farming patch has been moved to its new location. People were concerned about that last week, and rightly so. Half the tree was missing.
Uh-oh.
And now in the quest section, there's really not much in here, but this one's a big one. The miscellaneous quest line and affected quest now give the player a choice of which partner they wish to marry, regardless of their in-game gender.
Oh, that's cool.
I'd like to see them try and put this through a poll to the old school community.
Oh my lord. Yeah. It'd be funny though to watch.
It would be funny to watch because you know how their pride event shaked out a couple of
years
back.
Yes, that didn't. Yes.
Moving on to other changes, the Anachronia Slayer and Spa bonuses now work correctly once more. Players should now be able to purchase or rent the Wealth Evaluator again. Big Game Hunter multi-spawn encounters will no longer spawn if the previous kill on that dinosaur was not successful. That's good. So if you fail, you don't get thrown into a double or a triple again. Anti-poison totems now prevent the user from becoming poisoned while in Pyramid Plunder. And remember, they just recently upped the damage of Pyramid Plunder to be EOC level. So this is once again a good decision and item to carry when you're doing Plunder. Players can no longer work on member smithing objects in free-to-play worlds. Boy, I wonder how long that's been in-game.
Yeah, really.
The Dwarven Instinct Aura can now spawn chests when hunting butterflies barehanded.
Hmm.
I don't know if I have Dwarven Instinct Aura. That's probably one I should get.
Yeah, I don't. Well, good luck, because I think that was Premiere.
Oh, that was Premiere 2015. Maybe I have that one. Was that Premiere 2015? I forget what year I was.
Yeah, I'm hoping they bring that one out like they did Monster Hunt.
Yeah, that'd be good. Players can no longer stand near the northeastern pillar to negate any damage received when fighting nightmares. So for anybody upset about their safe spot disappearing. Joining guest clan channels now is a 1-minute anti-spam cooldown. Should you leave a channel and try to rejoin or fail the entry requirements? That's good. I can imagine there's some clans out there that are getting hate and were getting spammed at one point. Extra unusable fragments from the elite skilling outfits that are already completed are now removed. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. The clan avatar buff shows on the buff bar with its percentage. and the buff bar icon for the clan avatar will no longer disappear after logging out. Finally added a one-time teleport of players who are logged out on the upper level of a moved building in Burthorpe to the Burthorpe Lodestone.
Okay.
And there we have it. That's the patch notes for this week. And, you know, I think that we just got to get some kicks out of some of these ones in there. But in any case, some substantive patch notes this week, despite it being a patch note only week. So hopefully people can take that for what it's worth and take some good out of that.
Yeah, there was a few gems, but I don't think there's anything
groundbreaking.
Yeah, nothing groundbreaking.
All right, so last Friday we got the design diary for the episodic content team, and this is the new team structure that we're looking at inside of Jagex. So you got episodic content, live ops, core game experience, and mobile. And they're going to be doing a group discussion with each one of these teams. They'll be led by Maud Osborne along with someone who is a part of that team. And this one was with Maud Timbo. So starting off with the episodic content team, this is quests, challenges, skill training, landmasses, and pretty much anything that you play and do in-game that is going to be permanent content is going to be built by this team. And this is their way of splitting this out and moving forward. And this is where they highlight the difference between old school and RS3. And this is what we talked about last week is, you know, what's the difference between the content models? Why does the polling there work? And why is it different in RS3? And we actually got the answer to that in this dev diary or this designer diary. And that's the episodic content team in RuneScape 3 in particular seeks to push things forward and bring new things into game and effectively expand the game world. So that's what episodic content is all going to be about. So let's go through these problems and we can kind of sound off on them as we move through each of these. It was a 36-minute video, so we're going to sum this up in less than 36 minutes. I guarantee that.
Yep.
Problem one, there's too much content in game, making it confusing to pick up. After 18 years,
that's,
you know,
true.
Update every week. That's going to happen.
Yep.
So the goal is to, you know, continue delivering new content and, as they say, dynamic content releases, as well as removing the so-called knots and mess of the game. So what they want to do on this is focus on something that they're calling remasters, and updates in the past that would fall under this umbrella are the Clue Scroll overhaul and the Mining and Smithing rework, just to name two of them. They take loved, iconic, or potentially satisfying content and take it to the next step and bring it into current year. So that might improve. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and that also includes like area reworks, right?
Yeah. Which is something we're going to be looking at. Yeah. So graphically improve the content. Iron out all issues with the content around quality of life, rebalancing the content to make it rewarding and viable for any player, add new challenges so there's a reason for high-level subscribers to return to it with new surprises and new ways of mastering, add new rewards to thank players, and add new stories around it. And the example given, the classic example, and the easiest way Maud Osborne has to explain this is the God Wars Dungeon 1 remaster that would improve it graphically, mechanically, rebalance it to make it worth doing, and potentially add new items to it. Maybe add a new boss or a new tier of God Sword. And he said one of the things that we could do with this is take a God Sword that would come out of God Wars Dungeon 1 remastered and have the players use a new kind of metal with the new smithing skill to create this God Sword. And that's what we've been asking for all along.
That one came out of nowhere for me. I was like, did he just say remaster God Wars 1?
I would love that. I would love that.
You know, I can get on board with this. Yeah.
Also, a remastered Varrock. Make it more stylish, murky, claustrophobic, while adding things to find in each building, as well as new gang stories. And
yeah,
the benchmark
I think that's essential
for success will have remastered content be compelling to both subscribers and returning players, and be familiar and new to both.
Yeah, I would love to see that. I'd like to see that Varrock remaster come in before mobile. Although I know it won't.
No.
It would be great because, but that's where you go. Like, that's the Grand Exchange. That's where new players are going to end up.
That's right. They say remasters won't be the only way this is addressed, and they won't be afraid to remove things if they deepen the problem. So examples of this... we had a Siri activation there for some reason, but that's okay. Two examples of things that were removed were, of course, mobilizing armies and rat pits.
Yeah.
So...
Well, and will this help, like... So... They've layered 18 years worth of weekly updates in this, what they're calling spaghetti code. And they say if you pull on one string, then it can do something totally unrelated somewhere else. Is this one way of trying to address that as well without having to remake
without having to restart the game? Yes. And, you know, there's actually a good Informer article out by Sirion now about technical debt that everybody should read. And, you know, it's incredibly apt. So, now, and, you know, it also, I think, delves into spaghetti code, too, if I remember reading the top brief on it. But problem two is that they're trying to do too many different things at once, making the game confusing and complex. And it means that less of the core game content that many players want, like quests and bosses, they're not able to make just because they're trying new things and creating new genres of content. So in the short to mid-term, the entire focus will be around seven content types, including bosses, encounters, which are slayer, dungeons, mobs, skilling bosses, and more, drops, asynchronous minigames like ports, quests, landmasses. And it's worth noting that everything that was talked about in the survey in regards to player-owned is what they're calling asynchronous. So the farm is in that category, managing miscellanea. So they are dropping the player-owned, and they're just calling it asynchronous minigames.
Which, I mean, that makes sense to me, I think.
Yeah, and that's a far better way of describing it than player-owned.
Yeah.
And I think somebody on the show, when Anachronia came out, described Basecamp as a player-owned city. Might have been me.
Yeah, it might have been. I don't think it was. Yeah, I think it was.
And, you know, I think we can all agree that each one of these categories has been severely neglected. Well, maybe except for the bossing category with, you know, we have had high-level entrances, but we hardly haven't had anything mid to low-level in a long time. So that's good. Encounters, you know, more Slayer.
Yeah.
Dungeons, mobs, yeah. Skilling bosses, filling out the Slayer to 120. Drops, this category covers clue scrolls, alchemical items, onyx items, and Triskelion-like updates, which people, of course, love. Asynchronous minigames, it'll be interesting to see where they go with this, but they said one top category for this is a revamped miscellanea. Quests.
And people, I mean, I think people really enjoy this. I enjoy ports. I absolutely loved miscellanea. I mean, that was my thing for a long time. That's how Junior first came to be. Was yeah. I needed another miscellanea. You know, and I wonder if you know, just what is all going to fall in there. Like, I don't know, but this is good.
Yeah,
like.
I mean, each one of these areas has been neglected, and especially landmasses. They're using this as a container for the updates listed above. They feel that remastering existing areas or bolting on new ones is still an option for the episodic content team.
Well, and think about what – with everything that you just laid out and with remastering, think what that also does, what that's also going to touch, which will be the new player experience and those early things. And that's something that we absolutely
have to address.
And I think
these updates fit into that category of this is RuneScape 3.
Yeah, I think a lot of them do. And I also think that this is going to be, at least in my opinion, I think it's going to be better received than they think it will be. I think people have been asking for this kind of stuff for a long time. So I definitely love what they want to do with the episodic content. And I think the only thing that I would add to it would be for those times when we do receive the big updates, the priffs, the you know, the big ones, I would love for those to be player driven or requested. Something like that. Don't give us any more weapon diversity or this or that. Like, give us, when it comes to the big ones, give us the ones that we want.
Yeah.
Because I think we're going to be totally, totally on board with basically revitalizing the game. And they're focusing on the core elements that made RuneScape RuneScape. I mean, how can you go wrong with that?
Yeah. All right, let's look at the skilling side of it. In particular, they talk about 120s. They're going to be increasing more skills to 120, and they're currently working on two skills in particular. And we want to make it clear that they have learned so much from Slayer 120 that they will not make the same mistakes again. They'll be full, they'll have new items at every lock, they'll be worthwhile, and they will be fundamentally different training from 99 to 120 than 1 to 99.
See, that's what I've been trying to tell people until I'm blue in the face. Like, it is a different experience post-99.
Yeah.
Like, the rate is different. You want high rates because you're not talking 13 mil anymore. 13 right. mil is right. nothing.
And remastering will be done to skills that they take to 120. And they said, you know, they could keep producing new skills, and they could increase the complexity of the game with this, and they'll do this by making the skill immediately understandable in a way that Divination wasn't, but Slayer is. And they'll be ensuring that they enrich or stay out of the core game mechanics, and this might gently increase the frequency of new skills coming out, but not to a hugely noticeable degree.
This is an end-around rebuild, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I have a theory on this after watching this, after watching the live stream, after watching the video. And you guys can tell me if I'm wrong on this. The two skills that are being remastered and taken to 120 are Construction and Summoning. Construction was pulled as its own basket to 120 because that's what they're already doing. And they want to know what the blowback is going to be on that. Is the majority going to accept it, or is it going to be a vocal minority that doesn't accept it?
See, and I don't know. I guess I can go. I can go either way. I don't know. And
Let me just say why it's 120 construction and summoning. It's 120 construction and summoning because if you look at all the other skills that we have in game, which other ones need a remaster the most, in that their core ways of training really aren't fun.
Yeah, no, it's those two.
It's those two. And another reason is that Mod Osborne has said, you know, there's things we could look at that we might not necessarily remaster, and one of those things is familiarization. Why talk about familiarization if it's not in your mind already? So that's what leads me to believe, combined with the fact that, you know, hey, we're getting these changes done going forward, and, you know, there might be no familiarization going after this. But I think it's going to be Summoning and Construction. We'll see these announced at Ringfest. And the big update, let me just finish this big swoop. The big update that we were told about at the beginning of the year, that is the new update, the large update arriving in January 2020, is going to be the remastered construction skill.
There's no way they'll get it done that fast.
They've been working on it since last year.
You think?
Yeah. Because remember at the end of December...
Do you think they could have kept it quiet that long?
Yep.
No leak from Jagex?
Yep.
Jagex is like, but I thought like the fishing trawler was inspired by Jagex because it's leaky and you got to fix it constantly and try to plug it up,
right? I'm thinking of something right now that only you and I know about that proved this point about no leaks.
Oh. Well, I didn't think about that. Yeah. That's true. See, I want to believe in what you're saying. I want that to be the case. But I don't know because construction is construction is my favorite skill. It has been from the beginning. I know a lot of our audience really cares about construction, but I can't help but to wonder, you know, like when they tied that to the 120, I thought that was a poison pill, or what we'd call a poison pill in like legislation, right? You know, put something in there that you know the opposition can't possibly vote for.
And in my view, the view was in there is because it's already being done, and they need to work on the strategy for marketing to ensure that it is successful.
As in,
you know, am I looking at the minority or the majority who's going to be against this? And how can I adjust my marketing strategy going forward?
I couldn't imagine to getting a 120 construction. That would be – I mean, look, it's going to be hard. It's going to be expensive. Like, wow. I mean, could you imagine if they took what they learned from doing the aquarium and applied that to, like, your playground house, and then I just – this is everything I could have dreamed of, but it's hard to buy into it, you know? Yeah. Like,
and I also just want to throw this out there. I want everybody listening, if you have a good idea, to prove us wrong. Prove us wrong that it is not going to be summiting in construction. If you think it's going to be something else, maybe crafting fletching, tell us. I just think that's the way we're going. And if you guys have a different idea as to what it's going to be, please let us know.
See, I think crafting's coming, because I think crafting, we're going to get parity with what we have on this mining and smithing side, with being able to make your equipment.
And there's one problem with 120 summoning, is that by going from 99 to 120, you add an extra, of course, 21 combat levels, right?
Yeah.
Or no, you add an extra 21 levels. And the way summoning works is that every two, you get an extra combat level. So you're getting an extra 10 combat levels on this. So in theory, if they did raise summoning to 120, you would be looking at a new combat level max of 148.
Now, this is something we've dealt with before, but at the end of the day, isn't the combat level just purely cosmetic?
Combat level is meaningless. Unless you're dealing with PvP. And I think at this point we could say PvP is dead in RS3.
Well, exactly. But I remember when they tried to change the combat level before, people just they freaked out. And then
you know, that was in the EOC phase, when a lot of the EOC hanger-oners were still around.
Yeah, and I just didn't see what the big – I don't see what the big deal is with changing a combat level, because I don't think it means anything.
Yeah.
Most of our interactions, you know, like my combat level makes absolutely no difference.
Yeah. I mean, it ceases to mean anything when you see everybody at 138, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So problem three is the war on dead content. So they say they do monthly surveys about new content, and you may have participated in this. And every update that's launched over the last 18 months or so has had the same major feedback. The rewards aren't worthwhile. There's a good reason for this. They're so focused on making sure that we are not invalidating existing rewards that the GP gained against a boss released yesterday has to be balanced against the GP gained on a boss that was released 15 years ago. This makes creating rewards almost impossible, as the huge wall of existing rewards has to be factored into a new rewards designs. And in most instances, we release the rewards that are fundamentally more powerful in certain situations or with certain kinds of players. The result, generally, that means dead content for 90% of players. We want to make a change, and this change starts with a simple statement. It should be okay for new content to improve on older content.
Absolutely.
So what this means is that a new boss can be more rewarding than the last, a new training method more lucrative than something 10 years ago. This might seem scary, as we all have banks full of items that we value, but we want to reassure you that the changes mentioned above will make all of this a deal less scary. New content will, in the vast majority of cases, be a remaster. So the new best farmable boss at mid-levels might graduate from the Queen Black Dragon to become the King Black Dragon remastered. In a few years' time, there might be a Queen Black Dragon remastered and become the best in slot again. Second of all, the game will grow to accommodate these changes as skills move to 120 and challenges are remastered to become more challenging. Then the playground for you to use your newly powerful items becomes bigger and more exciting. It's also worth noting that the team won't be working on temporary content. We want our content team to enrich the game in the long term. We also won't be making world events, random events, mini-games, D&Ds, new content types, or huge lavish quests that have no connection to the current narrative. So this episodic content team will effectively be putting the lid on the Fifth Age. That's the way that I read from this. Mm-hmm. So we would need to see what this means. We would need to see a remastered Sears Village to get Elemental Workshop Part 5.
Yeah, okay, I see what
you're saying. Or a remastered Gnome area to get the new Gnome quest.
Right. But that's okay. Because the other thing that they talked about, too, was they weren't going to be so afraid of taking stuff out, right? Like,
yeah.
That's actually dead. And I think that's good.
And, this actually reeks of one of the mantras that came around in the mid-2000s, and it was surprising Jagex didn't develop it at the time. It was right when the whole new agile programming methodologies came in, and it was more a philosophical thing. So first and foremost, to summarize this, agile programming is effectively the situation that I believe Jagex employs. I could be wrong, where you build a quick iteration of something, see if it works, and if it gets good feedback or good test results, you iterate it further, and keep doing that until you reach release. And this came around in the mid-2000s-ish, became popular with many of the big companies out there like Twitter and Facebook and whatnot. But alongside of that came a philosophical thing of breaking things, breaking the glass, walking with a big stick, so to speak, and not being afraid to do things that people didn't do in the past. And to me, that's what it seems like they're employing with this, is they're carrying that big stick, they're walking around, and they're not going to be afraid to remove things if they don't fit in.
Oh, this is the whole move fast and break things?
Exactly.
That's where that comes from?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what I think we're seeing here with this.
Well, I'm good. I was just thinking, it's kind of funny. They break some things from time to time.
Yeah.
Check. Got it. Oh, Lord.
All right. Now, I think we can just sum up this entire discussion on this design diary and say that, based on what I saw in this design diary video, the post and the live stream, which we'll be talking about in just a minute, I have complete confidence with the roadmap that's been laid out going forward.
I do too, and I can't help to wonder, are we like abused partners or something? Because like a couple weeks ago, I'm going,
no.
I don't know what they're doing anymore.
No.
I don't know what they're doing. I've lost.
No, you were just saying that. You were just saying that because you were on the lookout for that. Because we had, to be fair, we did have a string of questionable things happen with game updates. And, it's fair to feel that way. And,
then,
I most of the time had a way to explain these ways, yes, this shouldn't happen, but it's not rare for it to happen. And, it's been so long since we had one of these that, this is, a flash in the pan, so to speak.
Right. And then they bring me right back in.
It's also a huge psychological thing, too. And this is true for the vast majority of the community as well. Because you have Anachronia, it comes out. You're greeted with 6 or 7 patch weeks in a row. I think we're up to 8 or 9 at this point. And that does a damper on player morale. When the next update that comes out revamps a piece of content, changes the way it works, and breaks something along the way. So while what was happening was bad with the Sigil update, it was amplified by the fact that we had seen a string of patch weeks since Anachronia with no new content coming in.
Yeah, that's true. Because when
And that falls to the live ops team, which we'll be hearing about from some at some time in the future. Yeah. So,
but like this video made, I mean, it really made me feel a lot better. I'm happy with what they're doing. It sounds like I've seen a lot of this sentiment in the community of just wanting to make the existing content better and redo it and make it better. Like, I've actually seen a lot of people asking for that. So this is going to go over better, I think, than they realize.
It's just going to be like the mining and smithing rework, the clue scroll rework, deep sea fishing.
Yeah. And it kind of makes you wonder, like, why, I don't know. I from those things, I guess what I took away originally was, oh, we'll let Jagex do what they want. But I actually think maybe the better takeaway was that revamping existing content is a very good way to go. And then let us guide you when it comes to the really big stuff. Like, don't give us big stuff that no one cares about. Like, only do the stuff that, and not everything, but, you know, I mean, if there's an outcry for something, then do that.
Right. And the problem is that you wind up in this situation that the game is in now, and it's actually easy to see visualizing it by working backwards. So from 2013 to 2016, you had the focus on the Sixth Age with, you know, advancing that Sliske quest line and whatnot, right? Mm-hmm. And then following 2016, we really just started to get into what happens. After that, we had some big updates here and there, but there wasn't really any overarching central theme at that point. The updates were epic on a scale, let's just say. But prior to 2013, you had a number of changes where, you know, the game's direction was one that was driven by the players with the polls from 2013, 2010-ish, I'd say, maybe, or 2012-ish, 2013.
No, those were the player.
Yeah, those were the player eras. But the point is, whether it's driven by the players or it's driven by the internal direction, it was just always, let's just add on to this quest. Let's add on to this area.
Yeah.
And when you get to pre-2010s, you're still dealing with the legacy development of RuneScape, let's just say, to the point where it was world building. And the further you go back, the more you get to that situation. And it's like pruning a tree. You start adding on, you give the tree water and you give it fertilizer and you know, fertilize every spring and you make sure that it gets enough water in the fall and in the spring, because, you know, you do want to saturate your trees with water before the ground freezes. I don't know if that's commonly known knowledge, but if you do have a new tree, you want to make sure that its ground is saturated before you go into fall and it freezes. You don't want to do it when it's going to freeze, but now is about the time of year if you're living in northern latitudes that you want to do that. I don't know why I'm talking about real world gardening, but
just such a farmer.
Anyways, the point is that trees require nourishment to grow. And once they grow, they start filling out. And once that tree reaches, you know, 3 to 4 years old, you're going to need to start pruning it back. And, you know, granted, we're dealing with a different time scale, but this is what we're doing with RS right now, is we're pruning it back and manicuring it into that nice tree to create that curb appeal.
Well, I think this, I mean, this made me put me at ease a lot more than where I was. And all I can say is, please stick with it.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest caveat.
Yeah, I really think you're onto something. Please just stick with it.
Yeah, definitely. In-game polls. Yeah, those were started in mid-January 2014, so after the whole old-school debacle.
Yeah.
That's when we chose between Invention and Prith.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, that was that era combined with the Sixth Age. So you see how the game expanded then. expanded again after the Sixth Age with more content. And before that, it was just world building that really had no direction to it. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, aside from story-driven direction of the Sixth Age, this is really the first time we have a all-encompassing direction that that at least we see externally for the way that they want to go.
Yeah.
Which is very important.
It does, because it solves a lot of the questions that can come up by not sharing this kind of thing with us.
Yeah.
You know, they could have had this and held on to it, and we would have still been spinning, and we wouldn't have been reassured, and we wouldn't have known. So I think, you know, I think it's actually good to have this information, and the more information, the better. I think it's actually... I think it helps. I think it helps prevent problems before they happen.
Indeed. All right. So speaking of sharing information, they did have a live stream this week that summarized all of this. And, you know, we're just going to give it a glancing blow because we went through the most of it already. But this week they had Mod Asher's Osborne and Timbo on the live stream with Mod Shawnee hosting. Annual survey was talked about, 40,000 respondents, largely positive, some nice surprises like Varrock Remastered being a hit, some negatives, 120 comes up a fair bit, some had issues with folding of updates together, but it was once again clarified that the intention was to compare how updates would fare if they were launched as batches. And the goal behind these designer diaries is just to be more transparent, talk more, focus on what each team does. Other examples of remastered content that were mentioned in the designer diaries and the live streams in particular were potentially having a new ZMI remastered dungeon for runecrafting that would be a skilling remaster. The goal is going to be to remaster large pieces of iconic content that bring players back. In regards,
well, see, and that's where they need to be with mobile comment. Like, gosh, I wish they had thought of this earlier, so that it could have, these things could have been happening, you know, before mobile dropped. Because, man, you're going to get returning players with that.
Yeah, precisely. In regards to doing too many things at once, you know, there's two options forward, new skill after new skill after new skill. But in 10 to 15 years' time, there'd be too many skills for a new player. And if the core skills that players love can be enhanced, that's where RuneScape should grow.
I totally agree.
A lot of people didn't think construction would work beyond 120. Priority one for the team, though, is a rework, and they are not going to be completely tied together. This goes back to pulling updates as packaged. And, you know, they talk about mining and smithing being fantastic. Though for 2 years of development, players should have been given more to play. And 120s would have been the way to go, but it was just an issue of time, retrospectively on that one.
It was time, but those are... I mean, mining was one of the slowest skills, and I think it was hard for people to envision just how smooth it was going to be. So taking it to 120 was going to be a hard sell, I think. Now, hindsight, yeah, totally could have probably done it, because it is so much better now. It's so much easier, so much smoother. But you don't know that ahead of time. And with the way we were doing mining before, you know, that's a hard sell, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we'll see things different going forward. It was just all that double design side of it that happened with the mining and smithing rework.
Yeah, you know, I don't think we ever should have even been asked about, because remember, that all started with, do you want us to just do a higher end rework or redo the whole thing? Well, it's like, well, yeah, I want you to do the whole thing. Like, huh? So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just comes down to making decisions. In regards to dead content, you know, we already talked about things being relevant, but updates that may not feel significant to players are statistically or numerically important, according to Mod Timbo. A 2% increase, for example, given that, you know, going the example in this case is that going from tier 85 to tier 90 boots, players feel that it's just not worthwhile for the cost. And the aim will be that any future content will be better than existing content. They were clear to mention that this is not a race to 99, tier 99 weapons.
I like that, but will the critics start citing power creep and all that?
I don't know. I don't know. We'll have to see the way it goes. Now, in regards to dead content as well, no content that is dead should launch for players. And if a Hunter update launches, it will be noticeably better than the Hunter update that was done this summer. And now I say at this point, this is why the Hunter nerf was needed, because it brings everything else down and allows for future expansion going forward. And then, you know, Mod Osborne said that exact same thing right after I made that comment in my notes here, that XP curves need to be managed properly, more generous than they have been over the past 6 months is the tone that they're going to be taking in terms of XP.
But notice how it was presented. Not a word of that was ever said. None of it.
Could you imagine how the Hunter rework would have gone down after that?
It gets the same, you got the same result. I mean, at least now we would have known, oh, there's future things coming that will make the rates better.
Yeah.
Like, that wasn't told.
Yep.
All we knew was, oh, we're halving it. Have fun. Enjoy. Hey, go catch an AFK butterfly, bud. You can go watch Netflix now. Whoopee.
And, you know,
I would have rather known this. This would have helped.
You didn't see this? You didn't see this as one of the reasons for it? I should have been. I should have pushed this more, because I had this in the back of my mind initially that, you know, you need to do this for the future updates that come out.
Right, but they never said that, Shane.
Well, and like, you didn't believe me?
I don't remember you saying that.
Okay.
I mean, maybe. I mean, I'm not saying you didn't, but I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I would have believed you. I just, dude, that one was bad. Like that was rough. And then they snuck it in. And it was, yeah.
The new player experience was talked about. Backend data suggests that it's going over well and players are being retained for more. Mobile will be getting a worn interface that will resemble what we have on the desktop, and that's what Earth said last week when he was on the show. The ability book will be combined into one with collapsible submenus, and the UI team is looking at adjusting the color schemes as they currently are on mobile, so that in general the color schemes between desktop and mobile will be similar. In regards to the Weapon Diversity Project cancellation, we went through all this in the news post already, but Mod Osborne says that there were mixed feelings on this, happy with being transparent about the decision. Timbo also feels that it was right, but he's disappointed, of course, because this was his design.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I think the last point to make is that they aren't willy-nilly going to be putting out updates and canceling them. There's internal playtests, surveys, and other things that they do to allow the teams to fail sooner.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, I anticipated that they would have those because I saw an email once upon a time. I think it was, I don't know what it was about, but it was about one of the updates this year. I think Clue Scroll. So, but, you know, yeah, that was it. I got an email about the Clue Scroll update in the survey. So, all right. I believe that's it for the RS section of the show this week. So unless there's anything else you want to mention before we move on.
No, not really. I mean, I'm just, you know, I'm sure I've said it before, what a difference a week can make. I feel a lot more optimistic now, and I'm very glad that they were transparent and opened up about what was happening. They didn't save all of this for RuneFest, because we, you know, needed to let some of the air out, and this was good for that.
Indeed. All right, we do actually have one other piece of RS news, but it kind of intersects with tech news. So I'll just say that before we do that, I'll just mention our Patreon page at patreon.com/RSBNB. You can sign up there and support the podcast if you want. This week, I'd like to thank Arvids L, Brock H, Cass, Darren L, Diana, Jason S, welcome aboard, Jason, Kyle, Logan H, Rippeth, Sam W, and Tom V. Thank you, all of you, for your wonderful support of RSBNB Update. It truly does mean the world to us. All of our Patreon extras for the past month are now out, including our monthly bit on the RS settings interface, which went out on Friday. Our inside RSBNB update for the month was a look at where Tanis records the show and plays RuneScape, so you can watch that on the Patreon feed as well. And of course, we'll be doing our roundtable in 2 weeks' time on Saturday, so look forward to that, and hopefully you guys will enjoy it. And, you know, if you want to sign up, you can do that at patreon.com/RSBNB. For $1 a month, you get a mention in our show notes, early access to the notes, the ability to join in on the roundtable discussions, vote for topics on the monthly bit, and of course, you help us fund the hosting and production of RSBNB Update. For $3 a month, you'll receive a special VIP rank on Discord and a special mention on the podcast at the start of the month, as well as high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show. And for $5 a month, you'll get a shout-out every week and gain early access to the clips that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. So all of that and more at patreon.com/RSBNB. And we are working towards that mythical $99 tier, which of course is movie night in the RSBNB Discord. So that would be good fun if we got there.
Yeah.
Alrighty, so tech news. You know, normally Jagex doesn't make the BBC. But they did this week. There's talk in the UK, the UK government in particular. One of the headlines was, ban kids from loot box gambling and games. So this talks about the committee in the UK Parliament in regards to what they want to do about loot box gambling. So the industry's UK trade body responded that in regards to the decisions made by this committee, that they would review these recommendations with utmost seriousness. And the committee MPs had accused some of those who had given evidence of a lack of honesty and transparency on microtransactions in video games. And of course, those are loot boxes, which contain virtual items, as we see in, well, RuneScape for Treasure Hunter, and to a lesser extent, Solomon's General Store. But of course, big ones in the past have been Rocket League, Overwatch, and many other EA games deal with that. So the Digital Culture, Media and Sport Committee's inquiry into addictive and immersive technologies heard stories of young adults who had built up debts of thousands of pounds through spending in video games. Jagex, the company behind the online game RuneScape, admitted that players could spend up to £1,000 a week or £5,000 a month.
Wow.
So Jagex
from Wales over there, huh?
Yeah, Jagex was at this committee testifying, and the MPs did ultimately find that the industry was, of course, reluctant to accept responsibility for intervening when a player was overspending.
Well, yeah. Duh.
And I think at this point, we can say that given what we saw with the designer diary of the episodic content team, the goal of RuneScape 3 is to push the envelope forward on new content. And we also need to realize that, you know, a good chunk of the change that Jagex makes from RuneScape 3 is indeed microtransactions.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course it is.
That's reflected every year in the reports. As to whether or not the company and RuneScape 3 would be viable without microtransactions, I don't feel as though I can make that assessment.
I'll refrain on that. This is what I think is important when it comes to the microtransactions. One, they're not that bad. They're really not that bad. I don't feel compelled. And honestly, I'm glad it's there if I do want it. So, I don't have any problem with where we're at with the microtransactions right now. It's not as bad as some other games. I mean, Jagex is not EA. And I don't even think the randomness of the Treasure Hunter keys are as bad as what a quote unquote loot box is. I just really think this is a part of the game that we absolutely need for the health of the game. And I know people are like, their hair is on fire right now, but I think that the numbers speak for themselves, and it's an essential part of RS3. And you have to have some kind of way to fund pushing the envelope forward, right?
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You can't do it if you don't have the money.
A new financial report for the previous year coming out soon. So that would be interesting to look at, I think, in terms of how the money is flowing within Jagex, particularly on the RS3 side, because last year was the first time they actually gave a breakdown between the two of them on that. So it'll be interesting to watch for this. And, you know, I just actually want to pivot a bit to this, to Jagex's response, which, you know, was done on Reddit, unfortunately, of places, because this is where the thread originated in regards to this issue of loot boxes in the UK government. This comes from Mod JD. He says, when Jagex was invited to participate in the UK government's inquiry into immersive and addictive technologies, we were happy to contribute as a voice that can educate and inform, especially to those outside of the gaming sector, such as policymakers. We love to explain why games such as RuneScape are popular, fun, and a hugely positive part of many players' lives. As the first games company to openly share its information, policies, procedures, and thoughts with the Digital Culture, Media, and Sport Committee, we were able to provide clear insight into our games and talk about the many processes and programs that we put in place to help safeguard and support our players. We want to continue to contribute and help to inform the ongoing discussion related to the health and safety of all people who enjoy playing games of all types, and will cooperate closely with the UKIE and other relevant parties to ensure a positive outcome from the DCMS Select Committee's observations. Now, this post has negative 315 points. But I want to ask everybody out there who is involved in this community, would you rather have a company like EA advising the government on loot boxes? Or would you rather have a company like Jagex advising the company or advising the government on loot boxes, when we know at its core that the microtransactions put into RuneScape are at the very least benign?
Yeah, well, it's kind of a mute point because literally every other day, the front page, half of it is bitching and complaining about MTX.
Right.
I think we should go live
in an alternate reality where EA runs RuneScape for a year and see what it looks like. If you want to see bad, that's bad.
Yeah. Look what they did to my beloved Star Wars. I mean,
and for anybody who can't see that and is wanting to give Jagex crap over that, get out.
No, I mean, you're right. This is something that I get really, really tired of. Cause nothing is going to change, right? It's not going away. So It's just bitching the bitch.
It's your choice if you buy those keys. It's your choice if you buy those rune coins. And, yeah, you know, there are institutions out there that help people who have gambling problems. And, you know, Jagex is a good corporate entity in that they do a lot with charity. They do a lot with mental health organizations. Maybe one of the charities they need to partner with is some kind of anti-gambling org.
See, and that would be great. And it's so egregious with some of the other companies. Like,
Yeah, it's like they have
even on. It's not even on the same level. Yeah. Like, it just doesn't feel even remotely the same. And
that's even why, though. And that's why I want Jagex advising this committee.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would too. And I just want to say this, like, everyone knows, like, I'm a bleeding heart liberal, but at some point, you need to do what you can to kind of keep an eye on your children. If my daughter did this, I can't see myself blaming Jagex. I think I would be like, what could I have done?
Yeah.
Maybe I needed, you know, there was something that I could have done. Yeah. I feel like.
And you know, that's exactly it too. Yeah. So. Next piece of tech news this week, Apple had their yearly new iPhone event. Also, along with this, they announced the Series 5 Apple Watch and a new iPad that starts at just $329.
Dude, I was excited about that.
Yeah. Everybody's talking about the new iPhones, but the biggest piece of news this week is this $329 iPad.
Yes.
Because previously the iPad was $399. This is a $329 computer. And what this allows for this to happen is it allows Apple to get back into the school. Because schools are going to be able to buy this for $250 or less.
Dude, I'm excited. Like, I was like, oh, because I knew I was going to have to get a tablet when mobile comes out. But I didn't really want to have to learn a new system, like, and I am
$329 is cheap enough, and it's got an A10 chip in it, which it'll take me a while
and honestly, I didn't find the new phone that impressive. Like,
that's because they're on a 3-year development cycle, really.
Okay,
for these,
so it wasn't just me.
The iPhone 11. Okay, so the new iPad is the equivalent of an iPhone 7. Which, really? I mean, isn't bad.
No.
It's just going to do everything you need to do.
Yeah. Huh.
So, I mean, who's going to complain about that? But on the iPhone side, I mean, this year the iPhone 11 is the flagship device. Its cost went down, I think, by about $100 from last year. It replaces the iPhone XR, which, I mean, given the price comparisons, we now have an iPhone 11 Pro, which is the old iPhone XS. And, you know, the biggest upgrades this year are, of course, the camera, in addition to the new CPUs and the support for more augmented reality features along with this. And, you know, I am perfectly still content with my iPhone 8 Plus.
After so all am years. I. Yeah, so am I.
And, you know, I just got to point this out because I pointed it out last year with the XR. The iPhone 11 has a 6.1-inch display diagonal at 1792 by 828. So you're not even getting 1080p on that. And the fact that it's at such a large size makes it more effectively like a 720p display. So it's the same pixel density as an iPhone 7 or 8, but it's at a much larger display. So yes, it probably looks good enough, and it looks probably better than most Android phones out there except for the Pixel and maybe the flagship Samsung. But you're getting an iPhone XR with a new CPU this year for the iPhone 11. And, I mean, if this is your year to upgrade, great. If not, I mean, it's got new camera advancements on it, too. The iPhone 11 Pro has a telephoto lens. They both have wide mode on their cameras, so with ultra-wide. I mean, I guess it's up to you what you want. Personally, I wouldn't get an iPhone 11 just because of the screen density on that. Comparing the iPhone 11 to the 8 Plus, which we both have, and you look at the display on those, the The 8 Plus has a pixel density of 401 points per inch, whereas the 11 has a pixel density of 326 points per inch.
Oh, jeez. Wow.
Which is on par with the iPhone 7 and 8. You also, this year, give up 3D touch in favor of haptic touch, which is a more limited version of it. So, I mean, if it's your year to upgrade and you need a new phone, if you're running on something older, get the iPhone 11, I guess. Because we all know how extravagant the prices are going to be on the 11 Pro.
Right. Yeah. Like, if it's your time, cool. But if it's not, then I don't think you're missing out by
$979 base for the iPhone 11 in Canada, which is better than what we had last year.
God, so expensive.
Yep.
So expensive.
Alongside this, I already mentioned the new watch, which, you know, is always – I think the watch is actually more interesting than the phone in this case because it's actually got an always-on display. Be interesting to see if the watch continues on, but I think the watch has proven itself as just something that Apple is going to continue to update and keep providing new products on, so I'm fine with that. And, you know, this is not my year to upgrade. I'm still waiting for that mythical device that is going to be effectively a smaller version of the iPhone 11, I guess. So, and we also have a release date. iOS 13 is launching on September 19th. No version or no date yet for the macOS Catalina update. But, you know, that'll be sometime in October, apparently. And I'm not so worried about that one because my Mac is, of course, the production machine for the podcast, and I don't upgrade that lightly. So,
right.
But iOS 13 should be good.
Cool.
I guess you buy a new iPhone this year if you want a better camera.
Yeah.
I guess that's what it comes down to. Finally, in some space news this week, water has been found on a potentially life-friendly alien planet about 111 light years away. So this is the first time ever that water vapor has been detected inside of an Earth-sized planet. The Hubble Space Telescope discovered it. It was announced this week in two independent studies from the Kepler space program. 111 light years away is super Earth. It was discovered in discovered in 2015. But what this means for most people out there is that it's 8 times the mass of Earth, and it orbits a lot closer to the sun, and it's a dark sun, and that's what puts it in the habitable zone of its star. It's 7 times closer to its star than Earth is. But because of this, it puts it in the habitable zone. Now, combine that with water, and if the planet is made up of something that's of similar reflectivity, known as the albedo effect, to what the Earth is, its temperature could fall anywhere between negative 100 and 116 degrees Fahrenheit. But if its reflective nature is the same as the Earth, its temperature would be roughly the same as it is here.
Right on. So that might come in handy.
And if there's water,
it'll take 100 years to get there.
And it would take more than 100 years to get there. It would take 100 years if you had a light speed engine.
Oh, but yeah, that's true. Yeah.
The way this goes is that if you detect water in the atmosphere and it's in the habitable zone, and there's an atmosphere, that means there's going to be rain. And that means that there's going to be water on the surface at some point. And we all know that the greatest ingredient to allowing life to appear on a planet is the presence of water. And that's why amazing. This is such a huge discovery. The only thing that could potentially usurp this is if it was closer, or we detected, in addition to water, we detected some kind of methane in the atmosphere that wouldn't necessarily be naturally occurring, meaning that there'd be some form of life on the planet.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah. That's the only thing that could push this further. And this is the announcement that people have been waiting for forever. Because first it was, let's discover the first exoplanets in the 80s and 90s. Then let's discover the first Earth-sized planet that's rocky, but it's too hot. Then let's discover the more Earth-sized planets. And finally, let's discover an Earth-sized planet in the habitable zone. Oh, and now we can actually discover an Earth-sized planet in the habitable zone that is relatively small and not a gas giant that we can actually detect water vapor on.
Oh, we just need to figure out how to get there.
Yeah, and I mean, that's not going to happen in our lifetimes, unfortunately, but it's an interesting scientific exercise nonetheless.
And a reason to keep funding space exploration, because I would say the Hubble telescope was money well spent.
Yeah, and you know, James Webb telescope is going to be the replacement to Hubble combined with Kepler. There's lots of planetary discoveries to be made in the decades to come, I'd say. All right, so moving on, we do have our two Skill of the Month competitions. By the time you guys hear this, woodcutting will be underway, but if you want to sign up for mining, you can do that. Just head over to rsbnb.com/skotm. Mining starts on September 20th, so if it's at all interesting to you, sign up there, rsbnb.com/skotm. The first mining competition since the mining rework, so this will be an interesting one to watch.
Yeah, that'll be pretty fun.
So let's run through some achievements because, you know, these are the best part of the show. Starting off, we have Popo with 120 thieving on September 11th. SW Martin with 99 agility on the 10th. 82nd Airborne with 120 slayer on the 10th. SW Martin again with 99 construction on the 10th, as well as 99 Herblar, 99 thieving, and 99 prayer. Up the Iron 05 with 99 Strength on September 10th as well. And finally, Minority with 99 Divination on September 9th.
Awesome. Well, we also have Mr. Jingles with 120 Woodcutting on September 8th. Ezel with 120 Invention on September 8th. Yitzi with 99 Hunter on September 8th. Mood Dragon X with 99 Mining on September 8th. We have Whiskey Panko with 99 smithing on September 6th. Cygna Gamma with 99 thieving on September 6th. We have Hemsky with 99 construction on September 5th. And Pouncing with 99 strength on September 5th.
Nicely done, everyone. I like these achievements. Good job.
Yeah, awesome, guys.
Alrighty, I believe you have a pick of the week for us also in the podcasting category. So what is it?
I do. And don't worry, this is not a competitor. But I know there are a lot of history buffs out there. In fact, I know of at least one other Informer writer that is a history buff. So this is for you. This week's pick of the week is called Dan Carlin's Hardcore History. And it's a history podcast. It's been around for quite a while. I just recently have started getting into it. And I absolutely love it. The first episode that I started listening to was about the Celtic genocide, essentially, that you've probably never heard of. But when Rome went in, they went in. And this is Caesar in Gaul type of stuff. It was so interesting. And, in history, it's basically, it's a story. And Dan Carlin has a really good way of telling a story. He paints the picture. You feel like you're there, you understand it. And, I just really loved it. Like I said, it's definitely for people that are interested in history. And yeah, I can't say enough good about it. I've really, really enjoyed it. Lately I've been listening to, it was The Rape of Nanking. So, I mean, it can, it's a broad range, everything from, more modern history to ancient history.
And, am I reading this right? That this one episode is 5 hours and 59 minutes long?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're going to want to split that up.
Yes, obviously. Okay. But what's kind of cool about that was, it's kind of like mini audiobooks in a way.
Right.
And, so I'd listen to it when I was like washing dishes or when I was doing my, I walk every day. So I'd listen to it then. And it's just something that's really, he's just a really good storyteller and he knows his stuff. So yeah, that's the pick of the week, Dan Carlin's Hardcore History.
Excellent. And of course, we'll have a link to this in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. All right, so what have we been up to in RS? I'll start this week, and I'll say that I got 98 farming on my alternate account, and I'm about 300k XP or so away from 99.
Nice.
So that'll be done before before the nerfs come in. And, I don't know. I have mixed feelings if I enjoy this new method of farming compared to the old method.
Well, you're an old-timey farmer, so
yeah.
I would expect that.
But anyways, as I have said previously, I'm not sure if I'll continue on that character. It all depends on funding and if I come up with a good way of funding the bonds for the membership on that one, which is looking at around, about 45 mil a month, give or take, which is a lot.
Yeah, that's sure gotten expensive.
It certainly has. Aside from that, on the main character, just chipping away at some wood cutting, and I've completed everything on the Anachronia base camp except for the Tier 3 Slayer Lodge because I'm missing the dinosaur tooth.
Oh. Does that come from Big Game Hunter?
No, that comes from Slayer.
No. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to have... That's going to be a little rough for you.
Yeah, it will be. And, that's one of the best benefits out there is the ability to have the Slayer helmet benefits without actually wearing it.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit discouraging, and we'll see if I want to up the ante and, do Slayer and work my way into the dinosaurs, and we'll see. Maybe I'll get lucky on that. I got all three totems from Big Game Hunter in under 100 kills, and, I have to just mention Parnassius here, whose heart was absolutely broken this week because, speaking of Big Game Hunter, he did over 450 kills to get the three totem pieces.
That's rough. That's Shane luck for you.
Yeah, I know lots of people would like my luck on that, so... But beyond that, not too much. How about you?
Been same thing. It feels like I've been doing the same thing forever. But just collecting charms on the main, mostly. And then I've...
Going for that 120 summoning.
Among other things, yeah. But I'm hoping... Honestly, I'm hoping when I do it, I can hit 200. I can go... Yeah, it's a long haul, man, but I want to try to hit the 200. I'm 94 mil right now. I think I could do it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
All right.
So I want to hit that, and that's what I'm doing the charms for everything. So I need to learn how to do familiarization. I still don't. I've never done that. And I know that would, double your charms for half hour. So
triple.
Yeah, so I really need to get that down. Because I'm being very inefficient at the moment.
Yeah, and I shudder to think at how many pouches and charms that would be to 120, let alone 200.
It's a lot. It was probably about 40k worth last time I did it.
And you see, this is the thing with the summoning rework. Maybe there'll be a less laborious method that doesn't involve charm hunting and pouch making to get to 120. So.
Yeah, pouch making skill, right?
Indeed. Well, I believe that does us in for this episode of RSBNB Update. We'll be back next week with a full reaction to the farming changes, and more. If you guys want to join us in-game, you can find us at Friends Chat, Bits Bytes, and of course we're also on Twitter at RSBNB. You can read all the Informer articles. They get posted there. And of course, if you want to subscribe to the show, you can do that on any podcast listener out there. You know, Apple Podcasts, Google Play Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, YouTube, practically anything under the sun. Just head on over to update.rsbb.com/subscribe and click on the button of your preferred podcast listener and you'll be taken directly there. I'm actually very proud that we're on Spotify. I'm glad they have a podcasting service, and I think lots of people use it for music, so it's a natural fit to be there. Mm-hmm. So update.rsbb.com/subscribe, and we'll see you guys next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. Take care, everyone.
See ya.